straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, episode 155, brought to you by Bud Light and Hook'em.com. My name is Cedric Golden, joined by my guy, the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, this is a special day on our little podcast.
Yes, it is.
It really is. In the past, we've had some great personalities from broadcast world. Brent Musburger, Kirk Herbstreit, Jim Nance, Brad Sham, Paul Feinbaum, Stacy Dales, Jane Slater, and our latest star, the one and only Holly Rowe. What's up, Holly?
Hello. I'm so excited to be with you. I'm going to try not to be offended that it's taken you 155 episodes.
Hey, that's all Cedric.
I'm going to get over it. I'll get over it eventually.
I wanted you on the first show, and
wow,
Cedric said, let's wait and see if the show takes or not, okay?
And so, and since we were about to get canceled,
yeah,
we decided to call you.
I like it.
Holly Rowe.
Baby.
A legend. I was curious, do you have a bobblehead? Has there ever been a Holly Rowe bobblehead?
Oh, my God.
That
no,
would...
flipping one that I'm working with every day is a body.
I love bobbleheads.
Well, you know what? You know, for those who don't know, and if you don't know, or then you've been under a rock or
in a cave,
or in one of those countries where they send the shirts where the team actually didn't win, but those kids need the shirts. So, Holly Rowe's the host of Big 12 Today. That's on the Big 12 Sports Network, Sirius Satellite Radio. But her big work is ESPN, volleyball, World Cup, track and field, running of the Bulls, big-time college football sideline reporter, one of the OGs, and she just finished up the WNBA Finals, Duck, where our very own Ariel Atkins won a title with the Washington Mystics.
Exactly. That was impressive. Did you enjoy that?
Oh, my gosh. I live for it. It is just one of my great passion projects in life is the WNBA, and Ariel Atkins just didn't win a title. She took it. She was one of the best players on the floor in game one. She had, I think, 21 points. Her and Elena Deladon combined to really throw a knockout punch in game one. Then she had some back issues. I don't know if you guys knew, but she was questionable in game three because her back went out one day. And
wow.
So Elena Deladon got a lot of that attention for fighting through some back issues, but Ariel Atkins had to fight through some injuries as well, and she came alive and was really unstoppable in Game 5 for the Washington Mystics to get their first championship in franchise history. And I'm so proud of Ariel because she's a second-year player in the WNBA playing like a veteran, starting for the world champ. So it's really cool for her.
Yeah, she's a tough cookie. She really is. So, it's interesting. I did not know this until today that you're a BYU grad. Is that right?
I'm not. I worked at BYU for a long time when I got out of college, but I actually graduated from the University of Utah. So
Utah.
I'm one of the rare people in the world that I grew up a BYU football fan because it was the best football, you know, in the West Coast.
Oh, yeah, LaVell Edwards. Yep.
LaVell Edwards is a legend, and that's where I got my start in broadcasting. So, yes, I have great ties to BYU, but I actually graduated from Utah.
There's some erroneous information floating around that World Wide Web, Holly.
Telling you.
Oh, I know. Somebody told me my Wikipedia page has said something crazy like I'm related to Mr. Wizard or something like that. I don't even know.
I think Cedric wrote that last week, yeah, I think. Yeah. So
I thought you were going to say you're related to T. Rowe Price. I was going to ask for a loan.
How does that work, having BYU, you know, rooting interest and work there and graduate from Utah? I mean, that's a big rivalry.
It is. It's really complicated because, you know, I'm a Mormon and I grew up as a really strict Mormon. Now I'm a wine-drinking, coffee-drinking Mormon. But, you know, when you grow up as a Mormon in Utah, you are a BYU fan by birth.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I think deep in my soul, like, BYU football is, like, my passion. But then I fell in love with Utah and the University of Utah football. So I root for both. And when they're playing each other, I root for whoever has the most on the line.
Ah.
Because championship or who's going to go to a bigger game or who's going to go to a bigger bowl game. So it's complicated. Our whole family has that Like, one of us went to BYU, one of us went to Utah. We were definitely a split family.
Man, that's interesting. Well, you've been doing this for the 21 years, is that right?
Yeah, this is my 24th college football season working for either ABC or ESPN.
Which is amazing, since you're only 30 years old. That's just truly amazing.
That makes me 30 because we're the same age, Holly.
No, is that right? We won't go there.
I got you about 6 months. I'm not going to
get. I'm
going to leave that alone, though. I'm not giving up my age or yours. Not on this air.
The thing I love about Holly said is that she's just a shining light. She is so bright and positive, but she'll get people to talk too. You know. And I forget the game this year. That who was it you were getting? Was that Jalen Hurts? You were having trouble getting three words out of?
Yeah, I was trying to get Jalen Hurts to smile or just like...
That's it.
And looking back, I wasn't sure if I handled that interview well.
Oh, it's perfect.
I don't know why I needed him to smile, but, you know, all the drama with Jalen transferring from Alabama, and he came out in his first game with Oklahoma and played really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just wanted him to be proud of himself for a moment. And I don't know if that's the mom coming out in me or what, but he was not having it. And he was like, nope, I got to go talk to my boys. We got to get some stuff right.
He was so stone-faced. That was so funny. And you kept goading him. And you finally got a smile out of him. So you pulled that out.
I don't know why I needed that smile, but I just wanted him to take a breath for a moment and be proud of his journey. I guess what I was thinking, but yeah, he has been as focused as any kid in America, and I appreciate that about him.
Yeah, and he was smiling a little bit Saturday in the Cotton Bowl. So, what did you make of the OU Texas game last week, and maybe OU's dominance? They kind of asserted themselves, it seems, and are they kind of one of your Final Four teams now?
Well, I really think so, because as you look forward to the Oklahoma schedule, I'm not sure who else is going to beat them except maybe at Baylor.
Right.
In December. That looks like it's shaping up to be a difficult game. But I think the thing that everybody's excited about is, number one, CeeDee Lamb has just turned a corner, taking the next step in his progression as a wide receiver.
He really has.
He was puking, and I mean, he had moves and was like, making moves like a running back out there. I was like, okay, CeeDee Lamb, put your toe in the ground. You know, 171 yards, a career high in receptions, tied his career high with 3 touchdowns. And I felt this early in the season when we had Oklahoma against Houston, is Jalen Hurts and CeeDee Lamb have chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to Jalen Hurts' recruiting visit. When he came out to check out, you know, he was the highest free agent in college football history.
Oh, yeah.
And he really was.
He was.
He came out for a visit to Oklahoma, and he ended up sleeping on CeeDee Lamb's couch when he made his decision to be there. I think he said he was on CeeDee's couch for 4 or 5 days. And that connection, that little brotherhood that they formed, is showing on the field. I see the chemistry. So I think that's really cool. And then that Oklahoma's defense was able to be, I mean, not just okay. I mean, a school record 9 sacks.
Wow.
The second most tackles for loss in a Texas game was 15. But I do, like, Cedric and I talked about this yesterday on baseball today. I have a great deal of empathy for Texas because they are banged up and young. You know, they replaced 8 guys on the defense, and then about half of the kids who were returning starters have been injured.
So, oh, yeah.
You know, it's tough right now for Texas, and I just think people are having some unrealistic expectations of, well, yeah, they won the Sugar Bowl, and we had high expectations, but they've been decimated, and I don't know why nobody wants to give them any sympathy or empathy, but my goodness, you know, they had 2 other starters go out in that game, and I just don't know how you continue to absorb this if you're Texas.
But, well, you're right. I wrote Saturday that I think Cedric would agree. We always kind of felt they were a year away because of that youth that you mentioned. They only had 3 starters back on defense, and the thing they wrestle with, as you know, Holly, being an expert on college football, is the expectations, the standards that a Texas or an Oklahoma or Michigan, what Harbaugh's facing, is to win it all, you know, and if you don't get there, and you know, people are going to be disappointed, and the LSU game kind of teased them. So do you agree, Sid?
Yeah, I do, and that's what I told Holly and her very capable host, Gabe Eichard, yesterday, that it's one thing to come into these games knowing that you have the expectations on your shoulders. But when you are banged up, especially when it hit that one position, the defensive backs. Mm-hmm. Now you're putting in guys that thought they'd be big players, but they're playing big minutes now. And we always, at the beginning of the season, had concerns about the lack of pass rush. They just don't have a guy that can scare a quarterback off the edge. Jalen Hurts was very comfortable on Saturday, and most quarterbacks they played have been comfortable. They haven't gotten after anybody on a consistent basis. And I told Holly also, I think they're going to work Kansas, but I just don't know that they're going to be in any easy games after that. You got Iowa State, you got Baylor, you got Tech. I mean, those are tough, tough games. And don't sleep on Kansas State, who always plays Texas really well. Better teams than this team that we're covering now, Duck, mm-hmm. have lost to Kansas State.
Sure. Oh, yeah. We know that history all too well. Where do you see Texas going forward the second half of the season, Holly?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for them because I think some of the air has come out. You know, like I think somebody I was talking to yesterday, maybe been you, Cedric, was telling me that Sam Ehlinger looks like Tech has gone out of his step. And mm-hmm. you know, part of it is he got beat up in that game.
He did.
The beauty of the college football playoff is I think we're finally crowning a true champion with the four teams that get into the playoff. It's better than the old poll system we had. It's better than the old BCS system that we've had.
Definitely.
However, I think once your team is out of it, I think it can really deflate the season for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to say Texas is totally out of it, but history tells us no team with two losses has ever made the college football playoff. You know, they'd have to run the table, beat Oklahoma again, and
right.
then maybe have a bunch of other teams lose.
Not going to happen.
Nope. Very unlikely.
Right.
Nope.
So how do these kids, and you don't want to think they wouldn't be motivated, but how do these kids each and every day get themselves up and get ready when they're kind of like, our goals are done. We're not sure if we can still achieve our goals.
I'll take that
now,
one.
I can
take that one, Holly.
Big 12. Okay, go.
These guys, sorry to interrupt, these guys were so starved to win any games, especially some of these seniors. You know, Tom Herman came in and took over just a shattered, fractured bunch, three straight losing seasons. So they're just happy the fact that we expect them now to win 9 or 10 games. So I think they won't have any problems going to work in the morning. But they have to be realistic. Like you just said, they're not going to the CFP. Even if they beat Oklahoma, no two loss team from the Big 12 is going to go to the CFP. There are too many teams like Wisconsin and teams like that that are still on the outside looking in, just waiting on one of those big dogs to slip up.
So who does your Final Four look like right now, Holly?
Well, I picked this at the beginning of the season, and I'm sort of proud of myself because I think it's still absolutely in play.
Okay.
Is Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, and Oklahoma.
Ooh. Nice.
So, you know, I went on this 7 teams in 7 days road trip with Marie Taylor at the beginning
of
the season.
I remember. Yep.
And I'm telling you what, I'll never get over this. We were at Alabama on Friday, flew the next day to Ohio State, and I left being more impressed with Ohio State. And, I mean, that is really saying something. They are big. They have got defensive line, offensive line. Justin Fields has really proven to be an adept quarterback. J.K. Dobbins is a 1,000-yard running back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their secondary is the most improved in America, possibly. So I just left our 7 teams in 7 days thinking, I'm not so sure Ohio State's not the best team I've seen. So, you know, they're continuing to look really good to me.
I'm right there with you. I've had Ohio State number one on my AP ballot for about 3 weeks now, and you're right. Both sides of the ball, a balanced team, mm-hmm. a quarterback, like you mentioned, Holly. I'm right there with them, but I'm not so sure. And I got LSU ranked number two. How do you see LSU-Alabama coming up in a few weeks?
Well, I think LSU has the best chance to beat Alabama they've probably had in, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, I'm not an AP voter, but if I was, I would vote LSU number one right now. And,
wow.
and I have to admit, I slept on LSU. I think that we weren't sure what they would be.
Right.
We didn't know how explosive this offense was going to turn out to be. So, you know, I think a lot of us are surprised by what LSU's been able to do. But I think given their schedule, win on the road at Texas when Texas was fully healthy, and we know how good that Texas team was that night.
Mm-hmm.
They to me have played the most difficult schedule and dominated it. So
no
I
question.
Think LSU is
yeah.
probably the best team in the country.
That's hard to argue. I mean, like I said, I got them 1-2, and I really would like to have them Ohio State and LSU 1-1A. So, you know, I'm definitely – how about Wisconsin? 4 shutouts in 6 games. I know they played some MAC teams, Kent State, Central Michigan, teams like that. But
hey, they work Sparty.
That's pretty absurd, isn't it? 4 shutouts in 6 games for Wisconsin?
It's crazy. Well, first and foremost, I've been obsessed with their defensive coordinator, Jim Leonard, since he was a walk-on safety for Wisconsin 20 years ago.
Wow.
So you said I'm the OG. The OG means I have covered just about everybody in the last 25 years. And I'll never forget, I did a bowl game where Jim Leonard had 2 or 3 interceptions in the bowl game, and he was still not on scholarship. And I remember in our post-game interview saying to Barry Alvarez, "So do you think he can get a scholarship now?"
Has he proven himself? Come on, Barry. Wow, that's
so not only did they put Jimmy Leonard on scholarship, now he's their defensive coordinator. He's doing a great job.
Well, Holly, so Jim owes you then.
Is he the same Jim Leonard that played for the Ravens, safety? I think he's
yes.
the same guy, isn't he?
Yes, and he was this undersized, little tiny guy. And he made a career for himself. I think he played in the NFL for 9 or 12.
Wow.
Yeah, he played a decade.
He's been there for close to a decade.
So you see where the Badgers' toughness comes from. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And the Big 12, it's been such a wacky league this year. OU's been dominant, obviously. But do you believe in 6-0 Baylor, Holly?
Yeah, I do. I'm a little worried about them this week because I think them losing Clay Johnston, you know, their leading tackler.
Right.
Yeah, I do think that's a big deal. When I talked to Matt Rhule a couple of weeks ago, he said, "We're playing well, our offense is playing well, our quarterback's playing well, but our defense has very little depth and room for error and injury."
Mm-hmm.
So now is that going to come up and bite them where, you know, they just can't overcome these injuries on defense? And Charlie Brewer had an atypical game. I think he had 3 interceptions
yeah.
last Saturday.
Boy, he's had 2 comeback drives, though, hadn't he, to win Iowa State and Texas Tech. So he's got some magic. I've kind of written that Charlie Brewer may be the most underrated quarterback in the college football that just nobody knows and nobody's really talking about.
I think you're right because he's not getting any national attention or
no.
press. And he is good. He is a capable quarterback.
He is.
He's dynamic. You know, he can extend plays, get out of the pocket. He can drop it on a dime. I really like him, and you're right. I think people wrote off Baylor years ago for
mm-hmm.
understandable reasons, but Matt Rhule can coach, and what I do believe in is Matt Rhule. That's what I believe in. He's a good coach.
And I just think he's going to be an NFL one day.
Mm-hmm.
Holly, before we turn it up one little notch with our little hot seat feature, which you'll love, I have one more question. We were high on Iowa State at the beginning of the season. I thought Iowa State was the 3rd best team in the Big 12 behind OU and Texas. But after Baylor beat them, I wrote that it's Baylor for the bronze. Do you think that Matt Campbell can still make a run at that top 3 spot and get into a much nicer bowl game this time around?
I mean, I think, you know, Baylor's at 6-0, so statistically, numerically, it's going to be hard. But here's the challenge for Iowa State. I believe in their defense. I think all of us were really hyped on Iowa State for what they'd accomplished. But I had a gut feeling, and I think he's proven it in the NFL so far, is that David Montgomery was going to be a much more difficult piece to replace than anybody realized. And it has taken 5 or 6 games into the season for them to find a dynamic rushing attack. Now, maybe they found it with this freshman, Brees Hall, that
mm-hmm.
went off over the weekend. First 100-yard game by a freshman since David Montgomery did it in 2016. So I thought that Iowa State was going to have some pieces that they had to replace. And I think I was right with that because it's just taken their offense a little bit of time to get going. And part of that's because David Montgomery did so much for them. He was a monster.
Well, you're right. You know, they lost Akeem Butler. Look at Alan Lazard now playing for the Packers. So yeah,
he's a hero
Yeah,
night.
He was. I think it is. I think it's taken some time. I think you're right. So are you ready for the lightning round or hot seat, as we call
Ooh.
It? Okay.
I think I'm nervous.
Okay. Don't be nervous. Okay. What is your favorite book or current favorite TV show that you got to watch every week?
Favorite book is Boys in the Boat, a true story about the Washington Road team that went to the Olympics during Nazi Germany's takeover.
Nice. Oh, my.
Yeah, they got the boathouse there. You can go see, can't you?
Yes, I'm going to do that this weekend.
Nice.
My favorite show I'm watching right now is The Righteous Gemstones. It's not for children. It's very raw and crude and hilarious. It's on HBO if you guys want to see some funny stuff. Righteous Gemstones.
All right, well, if Holly Rowe is hosting movie night and it's a marathon, what three movies is playing on that 75-inch flat screen in your playroom?
Okay, so this will tell you just what kind of a crazy woman I am.
Just don't say Joker.
I have two favorite movies of all time, and first one is Brian's Song.
Ooh, bring a handcuff.
And Billy Dee Williams. You know, the true story of Brian Piccolo and Gale Sayers.
James
Cohen. That's probably the most influential movie in my life because I just fell in love with football. And, you know, the race piece of that has been impactful in my life. And the Brian Song is playing. But then the other side of my personality, and this is where it's embarrassing, is The Sound of Music. And I love it more than life itself. I've gone to Austria and gone on the Sound of Music tour and sang every song at the top of my lungs.
There you go.
I'm going to throw this in for my son because we always do movie nights together and Die Hard. Original Die Hard number one.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Okay,
great
Holly,
Christmas movie, right?
Sidebar, Holly. Big debate always. Is that a Christmas movie?
Yes.
I think so, too.
My son and I watch Christmas movies on Christmas Day, and we each get to pick one. So I'll usually start us with The Holiday, and then goes Die Hard. Like, I 100% we judge that as a Christmas movie. Yes.
Nice. It's good. I watch Family Man. That's kind of my favorite movie with Tia Leone. That's a great one. Okay, who is your celebrity crush, or who was it, you know, when you were a teenager or now, or both?
Oof, I just have so many. Probably Idris Elba.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you and my wife.
And my wife. Oh, my God. He's so overrated. It's that accent.
Oh, yeah.
It's that accent.
Stop it. Overrated.
I like him. I like him when he plays a bad guy. All right, here's my last one, Holly. Who plays Holly Rowe in a movie?
Oh, easy. Renee Zellweger. We look just alike.
I love her.
She gets chubby for Bridget Jones when she has to add weight. Like, I'll sit in the theater, and I feel like I'm watching myself on the screen. So chubby Renee Zellweger is exactly my doppelganger.
Gosh, she was in a great movie for Netflix. I'm trying to think of the name of it. She played
Judy Garland.
No. It was on Netflix. It was a series. It was really good. But I heard she's great in Judy Garland. I heard she just tears it up. So, okay, here's the last one. Give us one thing that people don't know about Holly Rowe either. Some deep, dark secret, a hobby, or something you're good at, or just give us a little insight into Holly Rowe.
I am the world's best dancer.
Woo.
I'm literally a fabulous dancer, and I've had a dance room built into every room in my house, so I love to dance.
Nice.
And then my other embarrassing thing is I'm obsessed with mysteries, so I've collected every Agatha Christie book. I have a big collection of Agatha Christie books, every book ever written I have. And then I watch Murder, She Wrote probably every day.
Nice, Angela Lansbury. Nice. Holly, this has been incredible. I'd like to apologize for Kirk.
Oh, gosh.
Not wanting you on the show.
First week, I said.
I
he
begged,
said, no, let's
begged.
Save her.
He's so full of crap.
You know, every once in a while, he tells the truth. Every once in a while. But I never know.
You saved me for 155 episodes, number 155. Hey, you know, they say the longer people make you wait, the more you appreciate it.
Exactly.
So I appreciate this completely.
That is so glass half full.
And that helps us ensure there might be a 156 on. So,
well, you can see Holly Rowe this weekend, Saturday, Oregon at Washington. That's going to be on ABC at 2:30 p.m. We will not wait another 155 to have you back on. Hoops is coming up, and we're gonna be calling you back during basketball season, or maybe during the CFP if the Sooners get in. How's that sound?
Please do.
We will, promise. So you've been fun. Thank you, Holly.
Thanks, Holly.
We'll see you down the road. Bye-bye. Bye.
On Second Thought.
Duck, that Holly Rowe worth the price of admission, which was free, by the way.
Yeah, she's fun. She's knowledgeable. She's witty, glib, all that. So, yeah, we need to have her on regularly. And by that, I mean every few months.
I know. And we will. And she's awesome. She's fun. Talk to Tom Herman. You know, Texas hosts Kansas, of course, 6 o'clock Saturday at DKR, Longhorn Network, 104.9 The Horn. Do you think Tom had his poker face on Monday, or is he really not upset, like he said?
No, he's got to be furious.
Yeah, before we even get into that, listen to what Tom Herman said about not being upset when our Brian Davis asked him about it.
Just help me understand. Head coach is always supposed to be in the even keel. I know that. And I know everybody makes fun of me for asking, you know, pound the table questions. But just what's your level of anger right now about how you guys were physically outmatched on Saturday, and that's not how y'all play. Just what's your level of pissed offness right now?
None, other than at myself. You're right. It was the first time that I can remember that we got out physicaled on both sides of the ball, and that's not us. So I'm obviously disappointed in everything, in the way that the game unfolded, in the way that we played. But the only anger, I'm not going to get angry at the kids. I'm not going to get, I'll coach the coaches, and the coaches will coach the kids. And, if there's anybody to be angry at, it's me for obviously I didn't do enough to get our guys to play at the level that they're capable of playing.
I love that term, pissed off fitness.
That's a good word.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I think Tom was trying to protect his players, and he's in mama bear mode right now. Last week he was protecting the offensive line, and now he's saying that he's not upset. What is it going to take for him to get upset? He's got the worst defense in school history.
Well, see, I disagree with that stance myself, but, you know, I'm old, as we all know. I grew up in the Del Royal era, and Del Royal called it like he saw it. I mean, his last year when they went 5-5-1, 1976, he says, we're as average as everyday wash, you know, doing the laundry. And he didn't mind calling his team out because that's how he motivated them. Cliff Gustafson used to be the same way.
Augie,
same way. And I don't know. Let me ask you, do you think that's coddling them when he's saying, oh, everything is great and we just got to play better and play our A game?
He understands that they're banged up in several spots. And I think it's a little bit of the Mack Brown coming out in Tom. He did work for Mack, but he's more like Urban Meyer than anything, which surprises me that I haven't seen more fire and brimstone coming from him after disappointing losses. I don't know that he wants to give us the satisfaction of seeing him angry.
To me, that's not the point. This is the face he's presenting to the fans. And I think Longhorn Nation is pissed off, don't you?
I know they are.
I think, you know, their expectations, once you win 10, get to the Big 12 title game, beat Georgia in a New Year's Day bowl in the Sugar Bowl, the expectations only go up from there. They don't go down. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, that anything less than a Big 12 championship is a step back. You know, if you stay where you are, coaches like to say you're losing ground. And I don't think there's anything wrong with calling out your team as a team. He doesn't have to say, well, this player had the worst game of his life, and that player, just he really cost us. No, we're not talking about that. We're saying our defense is pitiful. I mean, that's unacceptable. I think fans want to hear that myself. And I think that I would have more respect for Tom if he kind of approached that that way.
You know what? You know what's got to really be keeping him up at night? You know, units kind of struggle cyclically, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like one time it's the offensive line, one time it's the defensive line. He's got units struggling at the same time. 9 sacks by the O-line, and then the D-backs make CeeDee Lamb look like the second coming of Antonio Brown. With Todd Orlando, Duck, do you think it's more injuries or his scheme that's hurting the Texas Longhorn?
I think scheme has a whole lot to do with it. You cannot, you know, minimize the injuries they've had. When you lose two starters in Jalen Green, your best cornerback, and Caden Stearns, one of your two best safeties, you know, you're not going to be the same secondary that you were. Josh Thompson's hurt. Now Chris Brown's hurt. So, yeah, they're battered there. But, you know, you can't have it both ways, too. And they had three defensive starters coming back this year. And we all wrote about, well, they're going to be young. Their front six has been decimated. You know, their only true experience is in the secondary. And that ought to be really the strength of the team. And the coaches, including Tom, you know, fought back against that. He said, yeah, I know you guys like the numbers. And, yeah, that's true. We only have three starters back. But we've got a lot of guys that have played a lot of football. Oscar Giles told me in August. We had 10 linemen play on defense in the Sugar Bowl. And he didn't sound the least bit worried. And I don't think Herman was either. So I think this comes as a shock to them that their defense has been this bad.
I think it does, too. And I think offensively that line was a strength for so many weeks. And now, and you know, they're not banged up, Duck. They're just not playing well.
They're not playing well. And I really thought this was their best offensive line in 10 years. I really did. And the way they raved about him, Herb Hand, a great line coach in my opinion. He was bragging on him and has all year long. So was Tom Herman. They pushed Zach Shackelford for the Remington Trophy as the best center in college football. Sam Cosme, a third-year sophomore, looks great. Parker Braun, grad transfer from Georgia Tech, a senior. That was really inexcusable that they looked that bad against a defense that had not shown that, well, they're a shutdown defense like Wisconsin. But they just toyed with the Texas offensive line. And like you said, it was 9 sacks. Could have been 12.
Could have been a lot more.
I mean, he was running for his life that whole game.
Yeah, if you don't have an experienced quarterback back there, it's even worse. So if I gave you the keys to the castle, what changes would you make?
Well, I guess what I would make is I'd start with Roschon Johnson, say he's my starting tailback.
Absolutely.
He's won the job. He's clearly the best running back. And I'd quit coddling Keontae Ingram. And this is back, we used to smack Mac around here and there because he would coddle him. And that's where they got their kind of soft repetition, their reputation. I remember Brent Venables after an Oklahoma game told me, he said, well, you get what you demand. And
then he turned around and apologized for saying it.
Right, but which means he meant it.
Exactly.
Just wish he hadn't said it to me. So, you know, so I would say Roschon Johnson's your starting tailback. I didn't mean you know, as Tom put it Monday, throw the baby out with the bathwater. You keep Keontae Ingram in the rotation. But it's clear he got 8 carries against OU. Roschon did, and Keontae only got 2. So it's obvious they trust Roschon more, and he's got more explosion. He's faster, quicker to the hole, and breaks tackles. He's more elusive as well. So that would be number one. Number two, I wouldn't necessarily get rid of the 3-man defensive front because it's still a pass-happy league. But for teams as balanced as Oklahoma that run the ball as well as they do,
got to load up.
I would go 4-man front in that game. And I'm not so sure I wouldn't put Joseph Asai, the linebacker, on the line.
I love it.
Make him a defensive end or stand-up end. Make him your elite pass rusher because they do not have one. They don't have anybody like a Chase Young at Ohio State that people fear and they got a scheme for. And I think Osai would be their best bet to put more heat on a quarterback. So those are the biggest three changes I'd do.
Well, you know what? They might do that during the take game. Who knows? But they can't just let these quarterbacks pick them apart. And there's some good passers left on this schedule, Dog.
And I don't know if one of them is this week, but I expect them to just ground and pound Kansas this week.
Give me a score. What do you think?
Well, Texas is a 3-touchdown favorite, and I think they'll cover. I think they'll come out blood in their eyes, ripping and snorting. They're back home after being gone 2 weeks on the road. I'm looking for something like, 48-17.
Texas. I hate you. Look what I just wrote down, the top of that page. We think too much alike. We think too much alike.
That's scary.
Which sets us up to be wrong. It really does.
We weren't wrong last week. We both picked Oklahoma.
I picked them by a touchdown, and so did you, right?
Yeah. Oh, I picked them to cover. And, you know, I thought they looked like they were a team that covered everywhere but the scoreboard on Saturday. That was one of the most misleading, you know, one possession, one score games
in the history of the series.
Ever seen.
In the history of the series.
Yeah, no question. And Texas was in it, yeah, but they were just scratching and clawing from the opening drive when Oklahoma just went right down the field to score 7-0. And without those turnovers, and give Texas credit for those turnovers, and that's one thing they're doing better. I think Texas is +7 in turnover margin, and Kansas, for example, is -5. So, and they're converting third downs offensively. It's just Oklahoma's a different beast. And Oklahoma looks like a team that'll be in the Final Four.
Yeah, they do. We fully expect the Horns to go to 5-2, and then they'll be 3-1 in conference with some tough games coming up. I don't think the Mad Hatter's going to come in here with some tricks up his sleeves. Puka Williams a really good running back, but I just don't think they have enough.
Yeah, Carter Stanley's got 25 career touchdowns. And you know what's interesting, Sid, is that the last 3 years – Kansas has given Texas all it's wanted and more. They beat them. Kansas won in 2016, and was that double overtime? I'm trying to remember.
It was just one overtime.
You were up there.
That was the end
Kansas,
of Charlie.
The end of the Charlie regime, and so they won that. And then last year when I was up there in Lawrence, Kansas came back in the fourth quarter and had either 17 or 21 points, and they're trying an onside kick in the last minute to try to tie that game and force it in overtime. And the one here, I think, was something like 41-27. So Kansas has given them fits the last 3 years. So Texas should be in payback mode.
On Second Thought.
Doug, don't look now, but that NFL pick segment is back on your podcast, sir.
Why?
Because people like the picks.
Do they like the
I know
the
I don't, the way I've been picking lately.
I didn't like them last time we picked.
So 2 weeks ago, Duck, you went 2-4.
Yikes.
And now you're 8-9 on the season, and this is against the spread, so it's difficult.
Right.
I went 3-3 to improve to 7-10. That's not improving. I just cut the lead on you. But
yes, you did.
I'm still 3 games under .500. Excuse me. Let's do these picks.
Okay.
Let's start out with the home teams. Dallas Cowboys -3 at the house against the Philadelphia Eagles. Bad secondary, but Amari Cooper might be down.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cowboys are wounded. But you know what? I think Philadelphia is going to throw a real wrench in the Cowboys' early postseason plans. I'm taking the Eagles on the road.
There's not a chance. There's not a chance Dallas is going to lose 4 straight games. If they lose 4 straight games and 2 of them at home, it'd be the apocalypse.
Jason Garrett's going to get fired?
They might fire him at halftime. I mean, this is a must-win game for the Cowboys for their season. And even though their record's still okay and the NFC East is the least, if they want to have any momentum going into the rest of the season, they got to stop this losing streak. So I'm going Cowboys.
Here's a really good one. The Houston Texans in a pick'em at Indy. I'll take the home team. Give me the Indianapolis Colts.
The Colts can't score. I mean, they can score and they can run the ball. Jacoby Brissett's a game manager. Houston is feeling itself. It's hitting its stride. Will Fuller, you know, has taken some of the heat off DeAndre Hopkins, which we saw last week when against Kansas City, you know, Hopkins got a whole bunch of targets. So I think Houston is hitting its stride. I'm going with the Texans.
And what about Charles Omenihu with the strip sack?
Yeah,
on
how about that?
Mahomes? I think they suffer a little hangover, a little KC hangover. The dysfunctional LA Rams are at Atlanta. The Falcons +3. I don't know why I'm taking Atlanta, because I just think they really suck. They're a soft team.
You've always had a weak spot for the Birds.
Yeah, because Matt Ryan was my quarterback when I won a Fantasy League championship. Yeah. So give me Atlanta +3 at home.
All right, I figure the Rams, now they have Jalen Ramsey in the fold. Their defense has been horrendous all year, because that's my fantasy defense. But, you know, Jared Goff hadn't played well either. So this could be a circle of the wagons kind of game. So I'm going to take the Rams and give the 3 points.
The resurgent Minnesota Vikings -1 at Detroit. What say you, sir?
You know, Detroit, what are they, 2-2-1? They got that tie with Arizona. They should have won that game. They probably should have beaten Green Bay, but they kept kicking field goals too. Yeah, you can talk about the two calls that were erroneous, but, I mean, you can't kick field goals.
Can't kick five field goals.
You know, so I think Detroit, they're at home, so it's a big rivalry, but I'm going to take the Lions.
Give me Dalvin Cook and the Lions. One more. Let's do New Orleans +3 at Chicago.
Well, that's a good one. Teddy Bridgewater's done a great job. You know, Drew Brees probably back in a week or two. I just don't think Chase Daniel is all that. And the Bears have maybe the best defense in all of the NFL. But I'm going to say Teddy Bridgewater another week to get that done.
The Bears aren't getting as many takeaways as I would like, but they will get after Teddy Bridgewater.
And let's pick the Giants-Arizona game, too.
I don't want to pick that one, Doug. Do you really?
You said you did.
Yeah, I know, but that's a lot of games. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to take the Giants to -3 at home against the fighting Kyler Murray's.
Yeah, I am, too. So, yeah, I don't think Arizona's going to go in there and win, okay. But I'm taking the Bears as well.
On Second Thought.
That will do it for episode 155 of On Second Thought. Thanking our friend Holly Rowe for joining us. For Kirk Bowles, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Ced and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.